Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, August 11th. I'm Ray Graff. It's computers. Today we have two computer experts on the line to answer your tech questions. Tony Yang is operator of Albany-based Gig Computers, which currently manages the computer network right here at Northeast Public Radio. Also with us, Mark Bogosian, owner and operator of Castle Mac Service in Latham. If you got a tech question, maybe you need a good defrag, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Hey, you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org if you wish, but the number is 800-348-2551. Computers, Tony, Mark, your call's coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's computers today, and on the line joining us, Tony Yang and Mark Bogosian. Mark is the owner and operator of Castle Mac Service in Latham, New York. With 35 years of experience, Mark offers a range of Macintosh service and tech support. Tony started Gig Computers in 1996 while studying at SUNY Albany. It's now one of the largest PC retailers in the region. Tony manages networks for numerous companies, including this one. If you have a computer or tech question, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number 800-348-2551. Mark Bogosian, Tony Yang, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here, gentlemen.
Nice to
hey, Ray, how are you today?
Good. Glad you're both here and the signals are coming through well. How are things during the pandemic for both of you?
Doing well. Very fortunate.
Everybody healthy?
Yep. Ray, I heard you were on vacation recently.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, it was great. But it's great to be back.
Absolutely.
Marginally. Tony, how are you doing?
I am doing well so far. Thank God. Everybody in the family is staying healthy. So far, so good. And really looking forward to put a wrap up on this thing.
Yeah, man.
I'm sure everybody else is feeling the same way.
I agree. Now, we have an email that came in prior to the show beginning. And this is one I think that anyone who runs Windows can sympathize with this one. Mike writes, I have two computers running Windows 10, 64-bit version 1909. My desktop, a Dell XPS 8500, is trying to force me to upgrade to version 2004. I have to keep pausing the update installation by 7 days. I occasionally search to see if there are any major issues. Can't find much information online that has been posted since June 20th. My question, is it safe to install this new version of Windows, or should I continue to wait? Have all the known major bugs been fixed? I'll be making a mirror image prior to installing this version, and that is from Mike.
Well, Mike, I think your approach is good. That's the best practice. You know, take an image of it. Then if you run into any problems, you can go ahead and get it restored. When it comes to home users, I typically will recommend that they go ahead and upgrade their computers.
Yeah.
Whenever there's a patch out, because you just don't know if these patches could potentially fix a problem that might come up on your computer. On the enterprise front, we don't always patch things whenever it gets released. So as a typical example, we will hold off, 3 to 6 months.
Right.
To see how other people are faring with the updates before we go ahead and push those out. And then there's sometimes we just don't push out updates at all if it's not impacting our users. But I think for the typical home user, I will recommend go ahead and get it upgraded. I think that by and large, it's going to be problem free most of the time. The issues with the upgrades are a rarity comparing to the amount of people who do the upgrades.
But yet you personally, and I know you and I have talked about this, you'll wait a little while too. You're just like Mike.
I turn off the update notification altogether.
Oh, I see. I see. So what's good for the goose, not necessarily good for the gander. I understand. All right.
This is one of those, like, you know, the mechanic drives the worst cars.
Yeah. So what do you got? Windows 95? What are you saying, Tony? All right. Let's go to the phones.
I got.
All right, 800-348-2551. Computers today with Mark Bogosian, who will answer your Mac questions. Tony Yang will answer your PC questions. Barbara is in Saratoga. Barbara.
Hello there.
Hello.
I have a question. I'd like your expert advice on this computer. For my Sony Vaio laptop, which serves all my needs very nicely, it's 7 years old. The problem is that I am fairly frequently getting a pop-up that says my battery is critically degraded and I should be replacing the battery. Now, Sony doesn't make a new battery for this model anymore, but I did find that I could order a Duracell battery from a store around the region here. I could order it online also. But I think that the Sony will also work without the battery. So I've just been plugging it in all the time. So can I continue to just plug it in and use it? And what are the pros and cons of buying a new battery before it goes kaput?
Okay.
All right. There's a quick answer to that. Yes, you can leave it plugged in and run it for as long as you want to use that computer. The only thing that a battery does is it gives you the backup power when you unplug it and you're walking around with it. There is nothing wrong with getting a compatible battery. In fact, we do that all the time. If you go buy a genuine Sony battery, even if it's available, they tend to cost a lot more money. So we routinely recommend and buy compatible batteries for our clients. So there's nothing wrong with getting a third party battery. But yes, you can definitely leave it in and have it plugged in and use it until the whole thing breaks.
And I just keep the battery in place and just ignore it. In other words,
yep,
I don't remove the battery.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't matter. Otherwise, they'd have a hole in the bottom.
It's usually pretty easy to replace a battery. Usually.
Yes.
Okay. And this says I could get
right
a Duracell battery for about $100.
Well, that seems
and
like
I don't know
lot.
If those come with guarantees, and does it depend on the seller?
They will usually, that depends on the seller, but they will typically come with a, 3 months to a year-long warranty. A year is about what you're going to get out of a battery warranty from most manufacturers. So you can leave that battery in there or take it out and still run it with the cord.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
So we'll probably just keep on running and plugging.
Right.
Thank you.
Yep.
I'll be plugging along.
Thanks, Barbara. We appreciate it. $100 for a battery, I'd plug it in too. Forget about it. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Computers Today. Tony Yang, Mark Bogosian are here. We'll be right back. Fox Pop on WAMC. Computers Today, Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551. We have Tony Yang here. He knows about the PCs. We have Mark Bogosian here. He knows about the Macs. If you have a question, give us a call now. This email came in from Joyce. Joyce says, I'm considering purchasing a new laptop as I have not had one since Windows Vista. I'm feeling very intimidated by Windows. I'm looking into a Chromebook, which is much simpler and meets my needs. What's your opinion of the latest Chromebooks? And that's from Joyce.
Mark, you want to take this one?
Well, I honestly don't know. I've only dealt with the Mac, so I haven't touched a Chromebook in years.
Oh, okay. All right. So let me give it a shot then.
Okay.
Chromebooks are a very, very inexpensive alternative to PCs. So if you finding yourself running, you know, just the basic Office application and browsing the web, doing email on your computer, and not a whole lot more than that. Chromebooks are a great alternative. They are almost virus free because the OS won't allow it. So it is a good alternative for limited use. But, you know, once you get to the point where you're trying to get business business productivity out of it,
right,
then PC is a better choice.
Okay. Yeah. You know, one or two of my kids have Chromebooks and they work very well. I mean, for what they do, they work very well. This one's from Sharon.
They do.
Sharon writes, okay, while we had two kids schooling from home, my husband and I both working from home this spring, we often experience slow connections and lag. My husband's job in particular requires extensive use of video streaming in Cisco WebEx. We're all using the same Wi-Fi router. Would having an additional router speed things up, or is it our internet connection speed? How can we tell? And that's from Sharon.
Sharon, the router would probably be a good thing. There is what's called a Wave 2 now standard out there, which allows you to get you know, almost as high as 2 gigs of bandwidth on that if you have a single connection.
Okay.
So that would be the first step that I take. If the router is old, if the wireless access point is old, get the most updated one. But I have to say that typically when the internet speed is slow, it has to do with the internet line itself more than the router, especially if you're sitting right next to it and it's still slow. So you may be dealing with, you know, problems on both fronts. But I would just buy over the counter, you know, one of the latest over the counter routers. Give that a try first, and then check your internet speed to see what you're actually getting out of that.
Mark Bogosian.
Yes.
Any, you want to add anything? I'm just trying to see if you're awake.
I'm sorry. I thought you were going to present another question. So I guess the only thing I would add to that is the, you know, it depends on what internet service provider you're working with and what their bandwidth or rate is at that moment. So you might, you know, if you Google internet test, a speed test, you'll find a number of different speed tests out there that will check your speed. And
okay,
one of the things I'd suggest is try it in the morning, afternoon, evening. And then maybe also address the problem with your internet provider. I know we use Spectrum. I've noticed in the past month or two, not so much when the shutdown first occurred, but last month or two, my speeds have been really dragging from time to time. So I'm chalking it up to something going on with the larger network outside of my own home. But yeah, once you check the, you know, just confirm with your internet service provider, maybe run a speed test on your system and try it on two different systems in the household, one on your system and one on a, you know, a family member's computer, and see if they're similar or the same at the same time, and then address the hardware, things like the router. Things have changed dramatically just in the past couple of years with the speeds and the, you know, the consistency of those devices.
It's Computers Today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. Mark Bogosian and Tony Yang are here to answer your questions. David is in Kinderhook. David, you're on.
Good afternoon. My question is about the USB super drive I have for my iMac. It worked fine for years, and now it's just rejecting disks. I've done sort of the basic troubleshooting. I wonder if it's just tired and I should get a new one, or if there's something I could try.
Sure, sure. It's an external drive, David?
Yes.
Yes, okay. It sounds like it could have just worn out. The mechanism, you know, on many of those third party or even an Apple drive, after 3-4 years of pretty consistent use, I've seen the mechanism just wear out. If it won't eject a disk, then it's most likely a mechanical failure. If it won't read a disk, then try a few other disks just to see if it'll read those. And if it consistently won't read disks, then again, it's probably just a hardware failure and time to move on to a new model, another drive.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks so much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Ahmed in Loudonville, you're on. Hello? Hello, Ahmed.
Sorry, I'm on mute. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to know, how do we set up a VPN, the one of those ads that you find on your YouTube, where like NordVPN or something like that, private browsing networks. How do we set up for the whole house?
How do you set it up for the whole house? So, Ahmed,
I just want all my computers to, or TV or everything, go through that VPN, use the VPN.
Okay.
So the way to do that, do what's called a hardware to hardware VPN tunnel. In other words, you're gonna instead of putting the VPN client software on your computer individually, you will actually use a router, a wireless router. Actually, most of these routers out there these days will establish a VPN connection. And in fact, they got many of these popular VPN providers built into it. So all you got to do is click on it and put a user ID and password on there. Once you establish a VPN connection between your wireless router or just a regular router at your house to one of these services, then all the devices that are connected will go through the VPN tunnel versus going through individual connections straight out to the internet.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our number is 800-348-2551. Mark Bogosian is here from Castle Max Service in Latham. Tony Yang from Gig Computer in Albany. You guys are still in Albany, right, Tony?
Yes, we are. We're still on Central Avenue. I don't know, 20 years or so.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you moved to a bigger location.
Oh, yes. We're about a block down, but we're still on Central Avenue.
Gotcha.
We were at 1314. Now we moved down to 1252. It's literally probably about just a quarter mile down.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. And Ed is in Ulster County. Ed, you're on.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I got two problems, but the main one is I have like this rather cheapy Dell laptop, and I'm getting these pop-ups constantly that, oh, your virus protection is expired, blah, blah, blah. They're trying to sell me that. But I get a pop-up that says, we can't install updates. Click here for more info. And it freezes the whole screen. There's no way to get rid of it except pressing the physical manual shutdown button and holding it down for a while till it really shuts down, and then start it up again. And with any luck, I might get 4 or 5 minutes before the same pop-up comes. And then for several days, it will be gone, and then it'll come back again. And I'm sure this is some kind of a virus. Whenever I get anything that freezes the screen like that, I never click on it. But I'm wondering what the hell I should do.
Good question.
I know what Mark is going to say about this. He's going to recommend a Mac instead.
Yeah, well, I would recommend not getting a Dell again, that's for sure.
All right, Ed. Duly noted. All right, Tony, what do you think?
Okay, so, Ed, it does sound like you might have some type of of adware running in the background that's causing these constant pop-ups, especially when it's saying that you're unable to do the updates. So, you know, we go back to the same prescription that we have kind of been prescribing for a while now, which is to get the system completely scanned and you know, not only for viruses but for adware. So Malwarebytes is something that we've been recommending for years now. It still does a great job. I think the pay version is like $10 a month or something like that. Well worth the money to continuously help you to remove and monitor adware. And obviously scan your computer for viruses. So, you know, whatever virus programs you might have on there, like Norton 360 is able to scan your system pretty thoroughly. But I will also do what's called a boot up scan.
Yep.
That Ray always mentioned, and I always forget.
Yeah.
So what it does is before it even gets into Windows, it scans your drive to make sure that, you know, there are no viruses on there, which makes make some of these viruses that can are able to hide behind Windows when you start it up, make those visible to the PC when you do a boot up scan. So scan your system and
how do you use Ed.
Depends on the program, Ed. You know, on my program at home, you go into scan your computer, and one of the options is do a boot scan, and then it'll do that on the next time you shut down and next time it starts up before Windows load. And I'll tell you, the boot scan takes a long time on my computer because I have a lot of files on there. So prepare for a wait.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the other question I had is I have this other older Hewlett-Packard machine that actually worked quite well, but the battery went dead in it, and it just shuts itself down. You know, right after you turn it on, it just totally shuts itself down. And then, you know, it'll start up again, but only for a minute or two. And so it's when it doesn't do that, it works fairly well. And I'm wondering if it's just that I have a dead battery and that somehow, even though it's plugged in, obviously I'm plugged into the, you know, the AC lines, could that be the problem? And maybe I just get a battery for it and it works again?
I have to say, if you have the laptop plugged in and it's still rebooting itself, then it's not likely that the battery is the problem. You know, the battery basically shuts down and it recharges when you have it plugged in. The cord connection becomes the primary connection. So you may be dealing with something else. But, you know, putting a new battery, I suppose you could try that first, see if that solved the problem. But I think that's unlikely going to be the cause of your issue. You're probably dealing with something else, Ed.
Could it be a power supply, Tony?
That's another possibility. If the power supply isn't providing a good connection, you know, that could be a problem because the battery isn't running. So if the power cord is not supplying constant power, that will cause the PC to reboot.
It's likely that it's a
loose connection on the on the power cord. Because if the battery, you know, if you wouldn't see that issue if you had a battery that's working fully, because it will just take over whenever the power kicks out, the battery will take over. But if you have a defective battery, then it's not going to, you know, there's no backup, in other words.
All right.
Okay. Now, the other thing on my Dell, it also won't do any kind of a reset or anything. It seems to think that it has so many megabytes of stuff on it, but there's when I try to scan, you know, what it has, there's nothing on there other than the operating system and a few photos. There's not a lot of stuff on it. So what does that mean?
It's hard to diagnose over the phone.
Yeah, it is. I would you know, go back to what we were talking about earlier, which is to scan your computer completely to make sure that you don't have anything that's in there that's giving you false alarms. So do the Malwarebytes scan, do the boot up scan, and hopefully you'll find something there. A lot of times that could be a problem. A boot sector virus actually can create weird symptoms like that.
All right, Ed, thanks a lot for the call. We go now to Karen in Clifton Park. Karen.
Hi there.
Hi.
My question has to do with my iPad. The memory is full, and I've been trying to deal with the problem. I have went and deleted a whole bunch of attachments that were large, and they repopulate themselves.
Karen, you use an email service like Gmail or something like that?
Yep, Gmail. Yep.
Right. So what happens often if the bulk of your storage is being used by attachments and pictures, things like that, and email is with services like Gmail, the iPad or the Apple Mail software will only delete it temporarily, and then the Gmail server, because it's still technically residing on that server, will reload it into your computer. That's why it keeps bouncing back. So the way around that is to either use the Gmail application, the app, if you go to the App Store and download and install the Gmail app and sign into that, or go to the Gmail website and actually delete the mails right from the source, from the server. So if you're using the Apple Mail client, the Apple Mail software itself, that only takes it off temporarily, and then when it rereads the Gmail server, kind of back at the home office, as it were, it will just reload it, repopulate it. So my suggestion would be to go to the App Store, locate, just search for Gmail, and you'll see the app, download that. You'll sign in with your username and password, and then use that from now on. It's a little different interface, a little different look and feel, but it will delete the mails right from the source, right from the server, so they won't keep bouncing back.
That's perfect. Now, some of them have to do with text, attachments, people sending pictures or whatnot via text.
Yep.
Any thoughts on that?
In terms of saving those or deleting those?
Deleting them.
Well, again, if you delete the mail, it should delete that attachment too, unless you've actually opened it and saved it in photos or on the device itself. But just by virtue of it being there, it will consume space. If you delete it this way, it will restore that available space.
Great. Thank you so much for your help.
Sure, Karen.
Karen, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. And we have computers today on the program. Tony and Mark here to answer your questions. We'll hit the mailbag in a moment. It's Vox Pop Computers today. Ray Graff here and you there. And we have guests who are also out there. Mark Bogosian is with us, and he is from Castle Mac Service in Latham. Tony Yang is also out there from Gig Computers. And our number here is 800-348-2551. A couple of emails here, gentlemen, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one's from Kevin in Greenfield. Kevin writes, I have a Samsung Nook 4, and it processes things like a sloth. When I play a video, it's fine, but opening a news website, it's a few minutes before it's all up. What can I do? And that's from Kevin in Greenfield.
Did you say Note 4?
I think it says here Nook, N-O-O-K.
Oh, Nook. Oh, one of those book reading things.
Yeah.
You know, Mark might have a bit more information than I do about the Nook. My understanding is pretty limited on that. The Nook is a Samsung. I thought it was like one of those, you know, specifically a book reading device. It's not really designed to be an internet browser.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
I will probably, Mark, is that right? You know, I don't know.
I believe you're right, Tony. And likewise, I have very little experience other than seeing a friend's once in a while. But yeah, I don't think they have the capability beyond connecting to the Nook services.
Okay.
But I think we might be stumped on this one.
All right, fair enough. Well, we'll leave you both that particular question for homework for next time. This one's from Ann. Ann writes, I have a new MacBook Pro. I downloaded my files from my PC onto a stick, then added the stick to a dongle because the stick did not fit into the new Mac. I put the dongle into the Mac, and the icon wants me to download SanStick program. How do I do this? Otherwise, what is the best way to transfer files from a PC to a Mac? Okay, which one of you gets this question?
Well, okay, so Ann, it sounds like you have a brand new MacBook Pro, and that's why you're using what you're calling a dongle to go from the regular USB to the USB-C. It also sounds like the stick you're using is not only formatted for PC, which you'd need to be able to use on a PC, but it sounds like it also has some embedded startup software that's launching somehow or running in the background or trying to run. What I would do is I would start off by putting that stick into the Mac and then you actually go into the applications, into utilities, and use the disk utility to format that stick. It will completely erase it, but format it for PC using the Mac, which it has that capability. Then put the stick back into the PC, copy the files, and then put the stick back into the Mac. So in other words, I believe your thumb drive, your flash drive, is probably pre-formatted for PC, plus it has some type of embedded software utility that might be useful on a PC but not necessary or usable on a Mac. So you want to take it, format it on the Mac for PC, which the software can do, and then that will erase it, go back to the PC, recopy those files, and move them over to your Mac.
Okay.
Most flash drives and even external drives come formatted for PC, and the Mac typically can read both formats, but it sounds like this particular one has a special utility embedded on it right from the factory.
Okay. This question is from regular correspondent Mark, and it's one that we get every now and again on this program, but it's a good question. Mark writes, if my kids and I use the internet at fast food joints or any place that's public, what do we need to do to protect ourselves against malware, spyware, or any potential danger? And that's from Mark.
Most of the time, you know, if you're at a place like Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks let's say Target, these places will just have a system that anybody can tap into. If you're doing things like banking or even, you know, Zoom these days, those are what we call a end-to-end secure connections. So let's say you're on your, you know, for example, for me, on my TD Bank application, that's encrypted from my phone all the way to TD Bank's server. So even though you're on a open Wi-Fi system, they can't see that. That entire traffic is completely encrypted. So not too much to worry there. Now, the thing that you do want to be vigilant about is make sure you put a good password on the devices you're using. So if you're using a laptop, make sure that there's a password to log into Windows. If you don't have a password, then somebody could potentially network on that open Wi-Fi system onto your computer.
Okay.
But as long as you're doing the basic protection, having a good password on your device, I don't worry about it much.
Okay.
Because most critical applications have end-to-end encryption built into it.
All right, last email, and then we'll jump back to the phones. This one is from Susan. Susan writes, my 2012 iMac OS X is running version 10.7.5, 2.5 gigahertz, 4 gigabytes, 1333 megahertz RAM. It gives a message that updates are no longer available, and I can no longer update programs as the computer no longer supports updates. Is this fixable? And that's from Susan.
Ray, could you just repeat? You said it's a 2012 running 10.7?
Yes, it's a 2012 iMac OS X running 10.7.5.
Okay. All right. So, Susan, your computer has the capability to go further and will, I guess, desperately needs to be upgraded in order to have anything from good security to website access. The reason you're getting that message is because you've waited so long, and I don't mean that in a condescending or critical way, but you've waited so long that the steps in between 10.7, where you are and where you need to be, are no longer available.
Uh-huh.
That is through the general websites and searching and things like that. Not to shamelessly promote, but we do have that capability of upgrading to those intermediate steps to get you up to something more current and usable. And the 2012 is definitely not too old to upgrade. You don't need a new computer. We just need to upgrade the operating system.
Well, is there something, Mark, that Susan can do on her own, even if it's many steps?
Not on a practical basis. The software, I believe, does exist out there somewhere. although I, because of the steps that one has to take, I honestly wouldn't even know where to point you. I mean, you could try Googling it. You may find it. The problem is that there are many of these download sites that claim to click here to download this update when, in fact, it's malware, adware, or something more nefarious.
Okay,
so,
we make a point there.
Technically, yes, I guess one could do it. You know, it's not rocket science, it's not impossible, but they're not readily available resources.
I mean, isn't that an inherent problem of the operating system if you can't update it?
Well, it's more so that long. There was a point where you could upgrade from 10.7 to 10.8, and then from 10.8 to 10.1, from 10.8 to something more current like 10.10, mm-hmm. and, you know, over the years, keep up to date. It just, in this case, it's been too long to go from 10.7 up to something more current.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Mark Bogosian is here on Tony Yang, and we go to Ed in Saratoga. Ed, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Two questions. I have an old MacBook Air, maybe 3 or 4 years old, and it now has no sound. I am doing Zoom with several friends, and they can't hear me. The sound production is fine. I can see them. I can hear them. It's a relatively old Mac. Speaking of operating system, I just upgraded from, I think, High Sierra to Catalina, and apparently that was quite a leap. So is this a mechanical issue with my microphone, or since it's a brand new operating system, I'm not sure what's going on.
Right, sure. And did the sound just go away one day, Ed, or was it intermittently worked, stop working, work, stop working?
I would have to say it just went away. Okay. We Zoom once a week. So other than that, I have no need for the microphone. So the real answer is I don't know.
Understood, sure. Well, the way to test that is to be able to boot up the computer with another hard drive, another operating system. I mean, I'm assuming you've checked your settings and system preferences.
Yeah.
The Air does not have an input for microphone like the older models did, so you can't plug in an external. It's only got the output for the speakers or headphones or things like that.
Right.
But the only practical way to test it, because the sound is actually built in, the microphone, pardon me, is built into the logic board. It's not a separate part that we can pull out or test. Is to, as I was saying, boot up with an external hard drive of some sort, an operating system, and then see if the microphone works there. It is possible that you have a software glitch of some sort, although not common. It has happened. There's also something called an SMC reset. Without getting too complicated, if you have the computer off, and Ed, you might want to grab your pencil and paper, with the computer off and the power plugged in, if you hold the shift key, the control key, and the option key, those three keys at once, and then press and hold the power button for 30 seconds, hold all four keys, and then let go and turn on the computer, that does an SMC reset. Sometimes that will resolve the problem as well.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Ed. And if you didn't get your pencil and paper, you can hear this online at WAMC.org. It should be up on the Vox Pop page, maybe 3:15, 20 after, something like that. Let's go over to Linda in Troy. Linda.
Oh, hi. Hi. Can you hear me all right?
You betcha.
Oh, good. I've got an iMac 24 that I bought in 2009. And it's loaded with software, which is, which is nice because I don't have to just subscribe to the cloud, but it has a lot of documents on it, Word documents, pages, Acrobat, and a lot of photographs. I'm an artist, and I use this. I take photographs, and then I have copies of my work and so forth. And now, I'm running 10.11.6 El Capitan, and it's stopping. It got a big problem when they dropped iPhoto and it went to Photos.
Yep.
And I spent hours, I spent a long time on the phone with the people from Apple. And, you know, I don't know if this glitch has been fixed yet, but I could never go from Photos to, like, to Facebook or to another application. I would have to move it to my desktop and work from the desktop as the platform in order to share the images that I created.
Yeah, I think, you know, that particular problem or glitch, as you say, is probably related to the version of the Photos app you have, which is related to the older operating system, which is restricted by the year model, the 2009 model. So because it's an older machine, you're limited to running a much older operating system, and it's very likely the problem you're experiencing, this particular, you know, unique problem, is because the Photos app is too old to interact with some of the more current web-based resources that you're talking about. So the only workaround may be exactly what you're doing, dragging it to the desktop and then adding it that way. And likewise, I wouldn't doubt with emails or other services like that. So unfortunately, and I understand and hear this quite frequently, why you're holding on to the old one, and it probably meets most of your needs quite adequately. But because it's an older processor, it cannot be upgraded further, and because it can't be upgraded further, we can't get the current version of things like Photos, and that's why you're having that break-in link. So I don't think it's anything broken or you're doing wrong necessarily. It's just the age of your equipment.
One, huh?
What'd you say, Linda?
So what do I do? What do I do with all these documents? How do I get them? Do I just put them?
We can transfer things from old to new. It would make sense to do a backup first. Again, I'm not trying to shamelessly promote myself,
no.
But we can help with all that process so that nothing would be lost.
I've been to you before. I've been, you're at some castle, right?
Right.
It can be taken care of so you won't lose. The only concern one would have is when, and I'm sure this is true on PC too, when you have these very old applications, like you say that you own, you don't have to subscribe to, they won't run on a newer computer. Many of those old Adobe applications or old Microsoft Office, things like that, just won't run on the newer computer. We can save all the data, the pictures, the documents, Photoshop documents, Word documents, things like that.
Okay.
But we can't actually run. They just won't run on the newer systems.
Well, Linda, go ahead, Mark. You can finish that.
I was just going to say that's a little step up from there.
All right, Linda, thank you very much. We're getting close to the end of the program. Karen in Amherst. Karen, you're on.
Yes, I'm calling about the Microsoft 10 software. I know that Microsoft issued an advisory that it crashes the computer just from simply, I guess, logging on and off regularly. And then on the heels of that, I heard that there are some very good back-to-school sales on Microsoft 10. But, you know, having heard that warning, I wonder if it's worth it to invest in.
Well, I like
Microsoft
Windows 10,
10.
I'll tell you that. It works very well for me. Tony.
I mean Windows 10, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Windows 10 has been very, very solid. It's one of the best products they've come up with, and it has some minor issues right from edition one, which is a rarity, honestly, with Microsoft. There's usually some big patches that have to fix existing problems. But Windows 10 has been very, very solid. I highly recommend it. I would easily recommend anybody to move to Windows 10. There are no known issues that I know of at the moment, so I would highly recommend upgrading to it.
So I wonder why they put that out then. It said it can crash your computer from repeated, logging on and off.
I've had it for quite some time. It hasn't happened to me. I know that.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
But what do I know? I liked Windows 98, so, Hey, Karen, thanks a lot for the call. I guess that's where we will have to leave it. Mark Bogosian, how do people find Castle Mac on the internet?
CastleComp.com, CastleComp.com.
All right, man. Hey, thanks for being here. Tony Yang, how do we find Gig?
We're at giggsystems.com.
All right. Well, listen, thank you both for being here. We will talk to you both very soon. And support comes from Kent Hicks Construction Company, featuring East Branch Homes, a new division of hybrid prefab homes that are net zero ready and low in embodied carbon, traditional to modern styles available, eastbranchhomes.com. And Daughters of Sarah, Community for Seniors, Albany, New York, providing a continuum of care for seniors, working to enhance their quality of life with dignity and respect, daughtersofsarah.org. Once again, thanks to Tony Yang of Gig Computers and Mark Bogosian of Castle Mac Service for joining us today. Thank you for calling. Apologies to those left on the line. These guys will be back again soon. And thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Kayleen White took the calls. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow's show is shrouded in mystery. We know that it starts at 2 p.m. and we don't know what it's going to be. I have no idea. This is one of the most, it's like opening Capone's vault. It could be something really great or it could be lousy. And well, we'll find out tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for the book show.